And now, here is an exclusive interview conducted by Michael Toms with Neil Donald Walsh.
Where were you in your life when you began writing Conversations with God? Were you at a low point? Can you go back and recreate that time for me?
Well, I was in a very bad place, Michael. I was noticing that nothing really in my life was working. I was in a relationship that was very unrewarding, and I must say, through no fault of the marvelous lady who was sharing my life and in partnership with me at that time. I simply didn't know and hadn't learned through all the years of my life how to make relationship work, even with a person as wonderful as she. And that was depressing to me because I thought, gosh, if I can't make a relationship work with someone as really wonderful as this person, then with whom can I make relationship work? And likewise, my career was in a shambles. I was working all right. I wasn't out of work, but the work that I was doing had become, after 30 years, terribly unrewarding and not at all a producing of happiness or joy or a feeling of fulfillment. Indeed, I used to think, am I going to be doing this when I'm 65? Am I going to actually retire out of this particular profession? And it did not seem to be the way that I always thought I would touch the world, nor the way that I thought that, for that matter, the world would touch me with its magnificence. I wasn't feeling that through my work. And my health, not surprisingly, because of all the rest of this, was also rapidly going downhill, with ailments large and small, seemingly assaulting my body, which was just about reaching the age of a half century. And so as I would wake up in the morning during those days and times, I recall feeling desperately unhappy and enormously frustrated because I didn't know how to deal with my unhappiness. I didn't know how to produce the kind of experience of life of which I knew that human beings were capable, but which I had not been able to produce in all the many years that I had been around here. And so it was out of that sense of desperation, and it was a months-long kind of depression. And I have to tell you, Michael, that I'm not a kind of a person who's, in his lifetime, been chronically depressed. In fact, I've never had that experience before. But if someone were to search for a clinical definition of where I was during that period, I'm sure they would say that I was, in fact, chronically depressed. That is to say, over a period of 8, 10, or 12 weeks, for 3 months or longer, I was just simply down in the dumps. And more than down in the dumps, I was beginning to question the very reason and purpose for my existence and, to be quite frank, whether I even wanted to go on. Because, to borrow the words of that wonderfully poignant song by Peggy Lee, I was asking myself, is that all there is? Is this really all there is? Because if it is, somebody send in the clowns. And it was out of that place of deep, deep desperation and enormous frustration that I awoke one night, unable to sleep, tossing and turning, and it was around 4:20 in the morning, and so I got out of bed, and so as not to disturb the lady that I was partnering in life with and the rest of the household, and went someplace where I could be by myself. I didn't even know, frankly, what I was doing or why I was up or what I was going to do. I searched around and rummaged through the refrigerator thinking my old friend food would solve the problem, but there was nothing in there I wanted, and so I went to the living room, sat on the couch, and looked at the four walls with one tiny lamp on. It's 4:20 in the morning. But I saw, luckily for me, that there was, for one reason or another, a pad of paper, a yellow legal pad, and a pencil on the lower shelf of the coffee table. And I reached down and I picked it up and I began to write. I simply wrote therapeutically to no one in particular, just an angry letter to the universe, if you will, to the great unseen. And the letter contained desperate statements and angry statements. Why, I can't even repeat some of them here in this interview, but why is life being this way? What does it take for relationships to work? Why can't I do what I love to do, truly love to do, and make a living? When is it my turn? When will life show up for me in the way I had been promised from the earliest days of my youth? And how come I can't have what I see so many other people having? Fulfillment and a sense of completion with some of the earlier mysteries of life, a sense of inner peace, and joie vivre, joy in life. What does it take? And I wrote all these questions out in a very angry letter to no one in particular. And when I was finished writing those questions, and I must have been at that legal pad for 20 minutes or more, finally I had written myself out, you know, and my hand was becoming tired just from the writing of it. So I put it down and I reached over to the side of me to put the pen down on the side table, and the pen literally would not leave my hands. And my hand was drawn back to the legal pad. I picked it back up and I thought, I guess there's something more I want to write here. And I frankly didn't even know what I was going to write next. But as the pad hits the paper, words came to me silently in my head from what I could only describe as a voiceless voice. And the voiceless voice said to me, and I quickly wrote the thought, "Do you really want answers to all of these questions, or are you just venting?" And I laughed, and I chuckled, and I said to myself, "Well, this is interesting. Where did that thought come from?" But I decided to play a game with myself. I thought, okay, I'm talking to myself in my mind. That's all right. That's part of the therapy, I guess. And so I wrote an answer. I'm venting, but I would like answers too. And if you've got answers to all these questions, don't hold them back. I'd sure as hell like to hear them. And with that, this voiceless voice again began speaking, if you will, in almost as if someone were whispering in my right ear. And I began writing as quickly as I could what I was hearing in my head. It was very much like taking dictation. And there followed the most extraordinary exchange that went on periodically over the next year, with my writing back, if you will, answering his questions or asking her questions that came to me, and receiving answers almost immediately, so quickly that I almost couldn't write fast enough to keep up. And several times during the dialogue, I had to say, "Whoa, whoa, 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 slow down a bit. Give me a chance here." And the voice did slow down. Very considerate person. So I was engaged in that process for over a year. But that particular morning when it began, I recall vividly, because I stopped writing after about an hour and a half of this back-and-forth dialogue, the beginnings of which formed the very beginning of the book Conversations with God. And when I finished, I turned back the pages to see what I had written. I had not done that at any point during the dialogue, but finally when I realized that I was talked out, if you will, for the morning, I turned back the pages and I began reading. And frankly, Michael, I was stunned with what I found there on my own legal pad in my own handwriting. And I didn't know where this was coming from. Partly I felt very, very much afraid. Partly I felt almost overjoyed. And I didn't even know why I was feeling joy. I just felt very joyful, the experience. And so it was a mixture of fear and joy, or fear and love, if you will, not unlike life itself.
That's quite an account you just gave, Neil. It sounds like what was happening is that you were outside of your thinking mind. Is that an accurate statement?
Yes, that's exactly how it was, Michael. I wasn't thinking at all. And it is said in the book, in order to really get in touch with God, you have to be out of your mind. And I think that I was out of my mind that morning. Many people think that I am out of my mind in general, and that may also be true. But I do think, in the literal sense, I was existing at that point outside of my mind. That is to say, I wasn't thinking at all about what was being said here in and through me, nor was I thinking about what I was going to say in return. It was a very much a spontaneous conversation as the one we're having right now, where I have no idea what you're going to say next, and you have no idea what I'm going to say next. And that's exactly how I experienced it, except that the voice was coming at me from just outside and above my right ear, and then I would hear it, and I'd begin to write. It was I had, in fact, often at the beginning of paragraphs, I would have no idea where the end of that paragraph was going. That was particularly true in the section on the Ten Commandments, one of the most extraordinary sections in the book. When I had no idea, I recall vividly when the voice said to me, "This may upset a lot of people, but I have to begin this part of our dialogue by telling you there's no such thing as the Ten Commandments." And I recall writing back, sitting up straight on the couch that particular morning, writing back, there are no Ten Commandments? And the answer came back, no. And I had no idea what that was about. I had no idea, well, now where do we go with this? And so all I did was just sit there in the darkness and listen and take dictation. And out came one of the most extraordinary constructions, one of the most extraordinary theological constructions around our concept of the Ten Commandments I've ever encountered. Quite apart and aside from the fact that that particular construction stepped outside of any paradigm I've ever held. It was, in and of itself, a unique description of our true and right relationship with God, in my opinion. And it was at that point in the book that I realized, at that point in the dialogue, that I realized that I was, in fact, communicating with something much larger than myself, something that existed quite apart and separate from me, something with which I had nothing to do. I even gave up my thought, well, I'm imagining this, or I'm calling this forth from my own higher self, or all of those other ways I was trying to explain what was happening. And it was after that section on the Ten Commitments that I realized, no, this is something very separate from me. And yet, of course, when the book was finished, I realized that separate from me does not exist in the experience of God. But I used the popular vernacular in that I understood it was not coming from any of my own prior experiences or my own previous thoughts about this thing called God.